22. The Reckoning, A Royal Commission and the Naming of Nicola Gobbo, 2018 to 2019. The launch of a royal commission by Victoria's Premier Daniel Andrews was a political no-brainer. Not that the police accepted this. They had received the High Court ruling before it was published and pleaded with Jill Hennessy, who had just been sworn in as the state's 77th Attorney General. Their message was simple: please don't call a royal commission. Hennessy wasn't swayed. As she told the press during the High Court announcement on the morning of the 3rd of December, only a royal commission will get the answers needed so that something like this can never happen again. But until the 6th of February 2019, no one, bar Victoria Police, knew the startling detail that changed everything. After the High Court decision in December, it was officially revealed, as Dowsley had long believed, that Gobbo was previously registered as an informer in 1999. But in June 2018, confidential papers from the pre-computer era of police record-keeping were uncovered in an archive centre. They showed that Gobbo was first registered not in 1999, but in 1995. Senior police did not confirm Gobbo's 1999 registration during the Comrie, Kelham or Ghanaian inquiries into her informing. It appears they didn't know about her earlier registration. She was an official informer, on and off, for 15 years, not the 3.5 years that numerous hearings were told about. Gobbo was informer G395, before she was informer MFG13, before she was informer 3838, before she was informer 2958. Police only get around to telling the Royal Commission about it the following Australia Day, 8 weeks after the commission is launched. The informer registration, 2 pages of handwritten notes in answer to pro forma questions, has been overlooked by Victoria Police over 8 years of reviewing themselves in relation to Gobbo's use. The oversight doesn't say much for the force's powers of detection, organisation, or commitment to the task of transparency. The revelations are symptomatic. The Gobbo devils lie buried in the detail, like gem specks that only flicker in bright light. And the details keep changing. As a consequence of the 1995 registration discovery, the Commission's terms of reference have to be formally amended. The new terms also give the Commission scope to examine the possibility that Gobbo informed unofficially as well. The best chances of making sense of her tale are scattered among the scribblings of decades-old logbooks, police diaries, and information reports. The opening statement of Commissioner Margaret McMurdo on the 15th of February 2019 sets out the Royal Commission's lines of inquiry. It will determine how many cases have been affected by Gobbo's duplicity throughout the entire period of her informing, and to what extent. It will scrutinise police handling of informers in the light of their professional obligations of confidentiality. Royal commissions are the outliers of the justice system. Change agents that apply a legal blowtorch to perceived improperness. Criminal acts identified by a royal commission can only be prosecuted by other agencies. The 2019 Royal Commission into the Management of Police Informants looms as a paradox, a potential launching pad for the criminal prosecution of the criminal prosecutors. McMurdo is perched above a crowded gallery in a sixth-floor room of the Fair Work Commission in Exhibition Street, Melbourne. No Gobbo-style miniskirts or exposed cleavages in this hearing room. Dowsley is here, dressed as though he's slept in, as is Carlyon, who wears a Hugo Boss suit he cannot really afford. Unlike the lawyers he temporarily resembles, he does not earn up to $10,000 a day. The gallery whispers about Tony Mockbell's life prospects. He was stabbed and badly beaten in Barwon Prison a few days ago in an incident unrelated to Nicola Gobbo. though it occurred not long after he composed 500 legal questions about his former lawyer. He was carried out of jail and into intensive care. 22 lawyers huddle at the bar table, including 7 QCs. Waiting journalists fish for a collective noun and settle on a murder of crows. "There's never been such a shitstorm," one of the QCs later declares. McMurdo reads from the High Court's judgment, which essentially found that the administration of justice trumped Gobbo's life. EFs, Gobbo's actions, in purporting to act as counsel for the convicted persons, while covertly informing against them, were fundamental and appalling breaches of EF's obligations as counsel to her clients, and of EF's duties to the court. McMurdo is a former president of the Queensland Court of Appeal. Her in-court persona, pearls and a queenly bearing, is replaced out of session by leather jackets and a breeziness described as boho. She likes stage shows and retreats from work by heading to the beach. McMurdo will foster commission staff loyalty by bringing fruit to share each day. She is across the wider commentary on the Lawyer X issue. She knows that ordinary people wonder why the Lawyer X commotion may offer freedom to the guilty. Some members of the public may query the outrage expressed by the courts, professional associations and legal academics at the conduct of EF, Gobbo, and the police, arguing that it had a positive effect, namely, the conviction of serious offenders, she says. But, as the courts have explained, these are matters of high principle, fundamental to our democracy. The rule of law requires that everyone, the rich, the disempowered, the poor, the mighty, individuals, governments and their agencies, police officers and corporations, everyone is answerable to the same laws before independent courts. McMurdo adjourns the hearing soon afterwards. She stands, bows to the gallery in keeping with courtroom etiquette, and tries to leave through a door behind the bench. But the door will not open. The unexpected delay is the first of many unexpected delays ahead. Even leaving aside the debacle of Victoria Police's belated Gobbo disclosure, this Royal Commission is hamstrung from its inception. It has subpoena powers and the right to raid properties. It has authority to compel killers and disgraced cops to give evidence, as well as countless serving officers who either can't remember or don't want to. What the Royal Commission does not have is time. Its deadlines have been forged in hell. 7 months for interim findings and just over a year to finish. Thousands of documents have to be produced, dozens of people examined. Many of them will receive aliases, checking the media's ability to add context to complicated issues. There are other challenges. In its first weeks, the inquiry is legally suppressed from naming the lawyer responsible for its launch. Gobbo is protected as an official ghost for 3 months after the High Court ruling. Who said justice was blind? Elsewhere, legal machinations rumble anew. Police have not given up. Outed for atrocious and reprehensible behaviour, the force once again seeks a permanent block on publishing Gobbo's identity. Victoria Police have returned to the High Court since the unfavourable judgment to argue that the court's decision to name Gobbo endangers her life. The legal logic of the strategy, after a succession of failed claims, is unclear, though the vigour of the force's fight cannot be questioned. Here is a boxer knocked down again and again, who just keeps getting up. The police want the genie back in the bottle, or, to use the journalist's vernacular, the shit pushed back in the donkey. Victoria Police have failed the demands of justice, and, yes, failed the needs of Gobbo too. But they're still arse-covering, despite being dacked over and over. Gobbo is considered to be in less danger than previously, however. She is a commodity worth more alive to the crook she has betrayed than dead, She could give evidence that will help free them. Victoria Police's High Court submission is opposed by the Herald Sun, the Royal Commission and the Directors of Public Prosecution, both state and Commonwealth. The police will lose this legal battle, as they have every other significant legal contest since Darsley's 2014 story. Gobbo will be named, and her picture will be published. Friday, the 1st of March, 2019, at 4 p.m, looms as a ta-da moment, when pictures of Lawyer X can finally be published alongside her name. For the first time, Darsley is confronted with being the news instead of reporting it. He stands at a press conference that morning, wearing a suit for once, in front of the microphones and not behind them. He has been interviewed dozens of times over recent months, but has never faced a press pack. He has trained himself not to let Gobbo's name slip, a legal breach that could see him jailed. He thinks how it would be just like him to stuff it up and name Gobbo only hours before he's officially allowed to. It's almost 5 years since Damon Johnston elected not to name Gobbo in Darsley's original story. Mind you, throughout this time, the more curious could easily have identified Gobbo through a Lawyer X Google search, finding her name, even with some of the poorest search speeds in the developed world, took about 4 seconds. Carlyon wonders whether naming Gobbo is necessarily the breakthrough it appears to be. Her mystique will dissolve. Naming Gobbo frightens Darsley. 5 years on, he's still concerned about her safety. As 4 p.m. approaches and the Herald Sun readies its online story, Nicola Gobbo is Lawyer X, nerves and excitement coalesce among the huddles in the newsroom. Johnston has slain a legal bully, but the release of Gobbo's name is tinged with unease, not triumph. What happens now? Darsley thinks, as he and Carlyon sip office beers, a rare festivity in a modern newsroom. He avoids the misplaced sense of jubilation that tends to infect journalists on the taking of a scalp. Here is a serious moment, with potentially serious consequences. Then he realizes he's drinking Victoria Bitter. Of all beers, he hates VB the most. Victoria Police have never welcomed royal commissions. One of the last Victorian police probes was the Beach Inquiry in 1975 and 1976. It recommended charges against 55 Victorian officers. After examining old-school practices of false confessions and evidence planting, of the 33 officers eventually prosecuted, none were convicted, and two later rose to be deputy commissioners. Public pressure for an inquiry into links between corrupt cops and murder exploded after the Hodson killings in 2004. Premier Steve Brax toyed with the idea of launching a royal commission. Chief Commissioner Christine Nixon privately threatened to resign in the face of continuing calls for a royal commission into police corruption. Instead, Victoria got the Office of Police Integrity and the Office of the Chief Examiner, controversial bodies with coercive powers. Nixon was jolted by her experience at the Victorian Bushfires Royal Commission in 2010. She was embarrassed by revelations that she left the Emergency Control Centre at about 6 p.m. on the 7th of February 2009, the night of the Black Saturday fires. "I had to eat," she later said on radio, unwisely, given it emerged she had received reports that many Victorians would die in the inferno. The onslaught she was subjected to in 2010 reinforced her long-held doubts. She felt royal commissions tended to be hijacked, derailed, or ambushed. A royal commission process can become the worst kind of kangaroo court if it is not managed properly, and it is all about playing to the audience, she wrote in her book Fair Cop. It becomes a public flogging. It doesn't say much about us as an evolved community if that sort of method is still considered appropriate. Victoria Police disdain the current Royal Commission as much as they have every inquiry into their conduct over the past century. This is obvious from the very first day of hearings on the 27th of March 2019. Predictably, the inquiry does not begin hearing evidence that day at the prescribed time of 10 a.m. There are to be hours of legal wrangling first. Yet again, Victoria Police apply all the arguments that have failed over 5 years of lengthy, taxpayer-funded court proceedings. The pattern of the months ahead is set in those first minutes. Victoria Police cannot locate the relevant documents within the prescribed timeframes. They need to make redactions before documents can be released. They fear for the safety of this or that person. No issue seems too small for their consideration. "Life isn't easy," McMurdo remarks in the early weeks.
"It's not in here," replies junior counsel assisting her, Andrew Woods.
Soon enough, legal suppression orders fill the door of the media room, which adjoins the hearing room. They spread to the next wall, like concert posters pasted at a railway station. One or two solicitors from the legal firm representing the police sit in the gallery each day, like props borrowed from the X-Files. The Victoria Police approach is effective, at least insofar as it ensures the Royal Commission is soon weeks behind what is described by counsel assisting the Commission, Chris Winnicky QC, as an ambitious timetable. Observers will be ejected from the room almost daily for in-camera arguments. The constant objections of Victoria Police's barrister Saul Holt QC, an urbane and witty fixture outside the courtroom, will feel like death by a thousand butts. Police have dedicated 100 people over four floors at an estimated cost of $1.5 million a month to the Royal Commission demands of disclosure. Their purported inability to find, redact, and readily produce internal documents seems self-serving. Much like the German war machine of World War II, Victoria Police have written almost everything down. This Royal Commission is like a never-ending onion, layer upon layer of events first depicted in the Herald Sun, peeled back by the participants, some of whom reach for the Nuremberg defence of following orders. Gobbo herself referred to the volume of police material during the Ghanaian Supreme Court trial in 2017. "What I was told on a number of occasions was that, and it was over time in an increasingly joking kind of way, there was literally a warehouse-sized vault full of documents, diary entries and recordings," she testified. Yet these documents are not being handed over in a hurry, with police asserting they are struggling to keep up with the sheer volume of requests. Have police misplaced the warehouse? Observers wonder why police were not compelled to hand over every document up front, then invited to seek to suppress or redact each document on a case-by-case basis. "Can I suggest to you and those instructing you, remind your clients, Victoria Police, that this notice to produce and their obligations under it, which are ongoing, that it is an offence not to comply with it, and an agency of the Crown, under the Inquiries Act, can be charged," Ms. McMurdo says in June 2019. Her wry asides have come to stamp the process. In May, she reaches for analogies. She joins in, having a whinge about Victoria Police. The initial statement of Detective Sergeant Saul Solomon, so damning of Senior Brass's handling of the Hodson murders, appears to have been held back deliberately. McMurdo doesn't say explicitly what everyone else is thinking, that the police's inefficiency is a tactic. The Court of Appeal has voiced similar concerns in appeal applications by Tony Mockbell, Rob Karam, and Steve Svetanovsky. By withholding documents, the police have dictated the flow and speed of the telling of Gobbo's tale. It seems wrong, given it's the police who want to impede the telling of the tale.
Historical suppression and non-publication orders and constant public interest immunity claims sometimes make my task in moving this commission forward, in public, akin to a boxer in a fighting match with one hand tied behind his back and the other bruised and bleeding, McMurdo says after less than 3 months of hearings. But I am still upright and focused on a positive conclusion. McMurdo receives some good news soon afterwards, on the 25th of May. Her commission budget is almost quadrupled to $27.5 million, later lifted to $39.5 million. And she now has until July 2020, later extended again to November 2020, to finish her report. But there's bad news too. In August, timestamping shows that Victoria Police have failed to provide documents that they reviewed months earlier. This confirms what was already suspected. Starving examiners of time to assess what's before them by last-minute delivery of voluminous documentation is a craven strategy usually employed by corporations and politicians with things to hide. Echoing the thoughts of Christine Nixon, Victoria Police appear to be treating this Royal Commission like a kangaroo court. They didn't seem to mind, during the gangland war, when a newspaper published the real name of Shifty, the getaway driver in the Michael Marshall, Jason Moran and Pasquale Barbaro killings. Shifty was the first in gangland to roll. That was a good news story. Now, in response to bad news stories, the force tries to keep changing the names of informers. Police demand new pseudonyms to replace the old aliases. The force presents an obsequious front in presenting arguments about informer safety, yet cynics identify other motivations, such as fear and loathing. Senior brass are potentially facing criminal charges, as are those further down the chain of command. The Commission takes a chronological approach, starting with Gobbo's earliest encounters with police. Dozens of police officers give evidence in these first months, answering the questions of a team headed by Winicky. Like Carlyon, Winicky loses his father in 2019, in his case, 8 days after the Royal Commission hearings began. No one would have guessed. Winicky is patient, conducting a verbal tap dance with witnesses. He is methodical, devoid of TV lawyer theatrics. He does not inflate at the sound of his own voice as some barristers do. Certain officers appear to admit to perjury in protecting Gobbo, yet Winicky does not seek to brand them as criminals. His understated approach brings to mind Paul Keating's 1992 riposte, "I want to do you slowly." Winicky questions officers on their understanding of client confidentiality, which they all learned about in training. He wonders why they ignored this training in their dealings with Nicola Gobbo. Some officers say they felt uneasy about Gobbo's use, especially her omnipotence before, during, and after the Mockbell drug empire was brought down. But most take their cue from a force steeped in intransigence against scrutiny. On the 1st and 2nd of April, Jeff Pope tells the Royal Commission that before taking on his role at the Covert Services Division, he informed superiors, including Sir Ken Jones and Simon Overland, about his professional history with Gobbo. He figured then that his work might involve her. It's tempting to sympathise with Pope in the witness box. He's represented by a barrister who earns a reputed $1,100 an hour. But the price cannot protect Pope's name. His forehead is sheened in sweat, his wedding ring shiny even in the dim lighting. Yet he projects complete certainty on the sex question. He utterly denies a liaison with Gobbo 2 decades earlier. Had he slept with Gobbo, he says convincingly, he would never have returned to Victoria Police for a second stint. Dowsley and Carlyon feel sympathy for Pope for another reason. In the witness box, Pope is accused of revealing Gobbo's informer status to Dowsley. Dowsley did not discover the secret from Pope. David Michel, the former drug squad detective and Dublin Street drug house burglar, is quietly spoken in the witness box on the 22nd of May, after almost 13 years in jail. His exit is choreographed to ensure he does not encounter his one-time co-accused, Paul Dale, outside the hearing room. Dale gives evidence on various dates between the 22nd of May and the 25th of June. On the stand, he is so belligerent that Winicky reminds him that he was not a baby at the time of the Hodson killings, but a grown-up detective. Like Gobbo, Dale prefers to dwell on the consequences of events than on their causes. He is obsessed with his treatment by police, but he isn't as interested in explaining how they arrived at their suspicions. He becomes flushed in a rage that remains unvarnished 15 years after he was accused first of burglary, then of murder. His hands are hidden from view. At times, they are surely bald. Victoria Police's legal team have the opportunity to cross-examine Dale, a suspect in a notorious unsolved murder, and pass. It's a recurring frustration for journalists that unprecedented insights into murders and serious crimes go unexplored because they do not slot into the Commission's terms of reference. Dale tells Dowsley and Carlyon he was pleased when a truck turned up at his Northern Victoria home in early 2019 and took away 33 boxes of documents for the Royal Commission's use. "I was just alleged corrupt cop Paul Dale, and no one will listen," he said. "But it's all starting to come out now, slowly." He leaped into the Royal Commission witness box in 2019 with great excitement, he says. He described police who perjured themselves in a day's evidence marked by his ability to turn his answer to any question into a tirade about police corruption. "The people we're investigating are murderers and drug dealers," Piranha Detective Paul Rowe tells the Commission during his second day of evidence on the 1st of July. "We can't just go, it's all too hard, we don't do it. There's risk that comes along with it. We do our very best to manage the risk and keep people safe." Rowe was the officer who took the phone call from Gobbo that led to her becoming informer 3838. He defies the cookie-cutter caution of most police in the witness box. He's much more forthright than his colleagues. He says Gobbo was no delicate flower. Police were not running a daycare centre for barristers who have lost their way. "All we cared about is criminal activity that was ongoing, that was right there in front of our face," he says. "I think a heap of Victoria police members would be more relieved if she had just disappeared into the sunset," he continues. "That would have been a win for certainly the Piranha Task Force and probably the majority of Victoria Police. No end of grief was caused. No end of grief." On the 1st and 2nd of July, Stuart Bateson sounds assured, but he admits that Gobbo helped him change her client Shifty's statement. Later, he offers his perspective on the sorry scandal. Bateson argues that it is possible to be both a barrister and informer. He also queries whether a criminal was entitled to independent counsel. "I think you can do two things," he tells Winicky. "Would this ever happen again? Clearly not. But my view is you can be a human source and a barrister at the same time." Yet Bateson concedes that if he knew then what he knows now, he probably would have acted differently. He is cool in the witness box, as if channeling his underbelly TV character, Steve Owen. In between sittings, he exchanges pleasantries with Dowsley. Between the 30th of July and the 5th of September, Gobbo's controller at the Source Development Unit, Sandy White, speaks down the phone to give evidence, for 17 days in all. Mr. White blends with the pseudonyms of his subordinates, including Mr. Green and Mr. Black, which also nod to Tarantino-esque stylings. The joke goes around that no one wants to be Mr. Pink. Gobbo's old handlers have opted for separate legal representation from Victoria Police, fearing they could be scapegoated by senior brass. As they give evidence, one after the other, the absence of a female voice reasserts Gobbo's solitary place as a woman in a man's world. White is proud that his team solved numerous serious crimes and defiant in the face of suggestions that they cheated the legal system. But his clear-cut judgments are smudged by the emerging evidence. Why didn't police seek legal advice about its use of Gobbo at the start? White didn't think it was necessary to consult with the police legal department, nor does he think Gobbo committed any crimes in her dealings with his unit. White's superior, Overland, a trained lawyer, didn't see fit to check the legals either. The available evidence suggests that he and White didn't want to. Inspector Andrew Allen, the first head of Piranha, says he would have sought legal advice. He didn't know about Gobbo's informing. To him, she was just a crooked lawyer, a female Walter Mitty. Victoria Police knew the arrangement was questionable. It hid Gobbo's informing from scrutiny from day one, and it's still trying to hide it at the commission 14 years later. The first ex-con in the Royal Commission witness box is also one of the first whom Gobbo double-crossed. Pistol Pete, who gives evidence as Person 12 on the 21st and 22nd of May, was set to be a Crown witness against four cops from St Kilda Police Station in 1999, but pulled out. What he didn't realise was that his lawyer was sleeping with one of them. He is shocked about his lawyer's romance with a police officer whose legal case conflicted with his own. If he'd known, he says, drawing gasps, he would have asked her when it was my turn. Pistol Pete is a convicted killer. He speaks the shorthand of the underworld. He offers a refreshing counterpoint to the police defence of Gobbo's use. He seems to grasp the wrongness of Gobbo's intimate associations better than any Royal Commission witness wearing a police badge. His views are later shared by a Mockbell drug dealer and the European. Soon enough, Pistol Pete will decide to sue Victoria Police for an obscenely large amount. His lawyer will be Levi Diamond, the one-time employer of Gobbo, whom she helped police try to jail. None of the criminals who give evidence sound like they need a royal commission to know that what Gobbo did to them was wrong. In secret hearings, the Royal Commission has deeply probed the question of whether prosecuting lawyers knew that they were working on cases built from Gobbo's informing. Were they in on the secret when they prosecuted the likes of Carl Williams, Tony Mockbell, and their henchmen? These secret hearings could be the great untold element of the Gobbo story. Did the conspiracy seep further than Victoria Police? The evidence suggests not, but the controversy still raises concerns about what prosecutors knew and when. Dowsley and Carlyon are told that some Commonwealth prosecutors did know at Paul Dale's trial for allegedly lying to the ACC in 2011, in speculations later borne out in Royal Commission testimony, although it's not clear whether they knew the full extent of her double-dealing. If any prosecutors did knowingly bring unfairly presented cases to the court, they, like Gobbo, probably broke the law. Royal Commission lawyers turn up at Melbourne's Court of Appeal on the 26th of July 2019. They want to see this. So do the BBC and other international media, as well as a lone Piranha detective who tries to become invisible. Observers, so crammed that they can't shed their winter coats, sweat for the first time since the annual grey enveloped Melbourne. Farouk Orman, the convicted murderer of Victor Pearce, has waited 12 years for this moment. He is about to become the first criminal to be freed from prison because he was cheated by Nicola Gobbo. He walks into the first floor hearing as a baby-faced assassin and walks out as a victim of injustice. This is no ordinary mention hearing. Ormond's guards do not try to settle his exuberance. He wears no shackles, no scowls. A suit balloons on his thin frame, as if he has borrowed clothes from a big brother, feeding the notion that time stopped when he went away. The court hears about the fundamental breach that goes to the very foundations of the system of a criminal trial. Ormond listens to accounts of his unwitting error on the 22nd of June 2007, when he was arrested and his first call was to Gobbo. She was determined to get him. She was also the lawyer for the European, the main witness in the murder case against him. She advised police about convincing the European to give evidence against Ormond, put him straight, after he hesitated about testifying. She lined a criminal up against a suspect, and she didn't care about the conflicts until there was a risk that her devilishness would be revealed. Descriptors for Gobbo's behaviour flow around the courtroom, from improper to outrageous, yet the police's use of her in informing against Ormond does not feature. Her client conflicts alone are enough to quash Ormond's conviction. Victoria Police get a leave pass. Their underhanded and multi-pronged approach to getting at Ormond through Gobbo is not examined in this forum. Ormond does not wallow in bitterness after he is freed by the court. He expresses gratitude to the Attorney General, Jill Hennessy, for accepting his petition for mercy after all his avenues of appeal were gone. Talk of multi-million dollar compensation claims is for another time. Ormond's history has been unwritten. His release is not a validation of innocence necessarily, but a recognition of justice undermined. In his case, Victoria Police rigged the odds in their own favour, like a football team that fields too many players. Robert Richter, the lead barrister at Ormond's original trial, was unaware of Gobbo's subterfuge until later. He didn't know about it when she pulled out of acting as his junior, and he still didn't know about it when he helped expel Gobbo from Crockett Chambers years later. He laments the Ormond case as one of three, including his defence of Cardinal George Pell, that did not go the way he expected. Will Tony Mockbell, Rob Karam, and others imprisoned by Gobbo's informing be released too? In 2020, their appeal lawyers will still be waiting for the necessary documentation from Victoria Police. The force isn't to be rushed, either in the Royal Commission or in addressing the wrongs identified by Neil Comrie back in 2012. Gobbo's deception of Mockbell and Karam, as well as mafia boss Pasquale Muscles Barbaro and his tomato tin syndicate members, explains why they all itch to be freed from prison, and why many fine legal minds believe that this is now an inevitable consequence of the Gobbo conspiracy. It doesn't matter that Mockbell is Australia's El Chapo and Karam Australia's Pablo Escobar. Everyone is equal before the law. When Victoria Police hoodwinked Karam and Mockbell, among others, they hoodwinked the justice system. Them one day, you the next. As December dawns, police top brass, past and present, Overland, Nixon, Ashton and the like, are finally about to take the stand, as is former Deputy Chief Commissioner Sir Ken Jones, a rare dissenting voice. They were flagged to give evidence months ago, but the commission schedule keeps being pushed back. By now, the possibility of criminal charges against senior police is being freely voiced. Victoria's former Chief Crown Prosecutor, Gavin Silbert QC, speaks of extraordinarily unethical behaviour. Talk about their testimony even rivals curiosity over the appearance of Gobbo herself. Among the first orders McMurdo made in February 2019 was for Gobbo to appear at the Royal Commission. Yet by year's end, she still has not provided a written statement. Originally, she was to give evidence in June 2019. Her appearance was then pushed back to September. She privately expressed hope of appearing, but by October, she officially did not want to give evidence anymore. The spy did not wish to come in from the cold. As 2019 nears its end, her lawyers say she is unfit to give evidence, citing mental anguish. 5 or more reports by psychologists and psychiatrists attended. They are current reports. Gobbo has found time, in hiding, to visit a number of professionals in recent months. One psychologist says she has no support and no self-esteem. Drugs cannot address her psychiatric conditions or severe depression, prompting an ominous phrase, therapeutic nihilism. 2 of the experts say Gobbo cannot testify, while another says it would be helpful for her. It's difficult to form judgments given these differing points of view. By now, Gobbo's potential crimes include burglary, attempts to pervert justice, perjury, and obtaining financial gain by deception. In 2010, Gobbo was suspected of being a conduit in the lead-up to the Hodson murders. Police have also queried her knowledge of the Jason Moran hit a year earlier. Police are leery of hearing Gobbo air her views in public. Her evidence promises insights that have so far eluded the most thorough exploration of the scandal of Nicola Gobbo. Victoria Police are just like everyone else, waiting for Gobbo.